stars of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Where truth is our bitch. It is the Phil Hendry Show. And we're on our website as well as on the air listening for you to I was going to say we're listening to you. That's an interesting way of approaching the beginning of a radio show when you misspeak. We're listening to you. You don't have to listen to me anymore. I want to listen to you. I'm sick and tired of people listening to me. I would rather listen to you. So starting Monday, we'll be walking around listening to the radio and not being on it. All right.
Well, that means you're fired.
Pretty much, yeah. That would mean you're fired. So that's a way of...
You can tell guys that have been fired that.
Oh, I was going to say, you can tell people, which, thank you, bud. I can tell any of you guys who are about to be fired, have been fired, you can, of course, I don't know who you'd tell this to, but it's a nice out-of-work slug. I'm now listening to you. I'm Bob so-and-so. I'm Jason whatever. It used to be you listening to me. Well, now I'm listening to you. Walking the streets of Indianapolis, listening to you.
Yes, walking the streets of Indianapolis and getting into an unemployment line. I don't think there's a lot of people that would find that very funny. By the way, there was something I wanted to tell you.
Yes, Margaret Gray, folks.
Hello. I forgot.
You're a dude I can't do.
I'll take my direction from Phil, thank you very much.
All right, let's not start right off the bat.
No, it's fine. I'll take my direction from Phil, thank you very much.
You always do that, though.
He's right. You always will start with...
I don't always do it.
All right, but the last few nights you've been, oh, I have something to say, oh, I forgot. It's a little weird, you know.
No, it's not weird. It might be unnerving. It's not weird. Excuse me. That may be weird. I don't think it is, but you consider it weird. I'll let you have that. I'll give you that. I'll give you the fact that my belches are weird.
I don't think they're weird. I think they're crude, uncouth, and uncalled for. Well, you know. So, starting things off as usual, folks.
No, I didn't say anything, man. I didn't say a word. I want to get involved. I want to see the show start off in a good way. And you talk about belch, talking about, I even forgot I was so insignificant.
That's the truth. I forgot, too. I don't even know what you two were arguing about other than it was, it was turf again. Who gets to do what when? Look, let's just start all over again. Hi, it's Phil Hendry, and welcome. I have myself, I have Margaret, I have Robert, I have Bud, and welcome to our program. We Listen to You is a new slug that we think will allow anybody to have. I'm not going to copyright it. I'm not going to turn into a guy that people think I am anyway, which is a Mr. Copyright Protection guy. And so,
Well, you're not going to copyright that.
No, of course I'm not. Anyway, if you're out of work, use that one. We listen to you. All right. So tonight we have, starting things off here this evening. By the way, as I mentioned, we're online at philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and you'll probably be able to figure this crap out a lot easier than I've been able to figure it out myself, even as I say it. There is a story that I was reading just before we went on the air here concerning a sorority in Indiana, and it was there was an inappropriate party that was held at a sorority at the University of Indiana University. I think it's Indiana University.
It's IU.
Is that Indiana University?
Yes, IU.
Is that Indiana Uni?
Bud.
No.
IU, Indiana University.
Oh.
What do you think it said?
That IU.
You thought I was talking like someone with a disability.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, take it easy, Margaret, you know. In any event, I was reading this story about a sorority that had a homeless party and the signs hanging around their neck, you know, why lie, the money's for beer, this kind of thing. So they said that was really insensitive. Now we were reading something else, I think it's unrelated, of a woman who published some kind of email rant. A sorority sister had to resign. And I'm not really clear on this story. It's very bizarre, and it has to do with a, quote, mean girl sorority rant that was read around the world and has taken a somewhat predictable turn with Delta Gamma sister Rebecca Martinson resigning from her sorority Wednesday because of her profanity-laced, media frenzy-inducing email. Delta Gamma has accepted the resignation of one of its members whose email relating to a social event has been widely distributed and publicized through social media and traditional media channels. The tone and content of the email was highly inappropriate and unacceptable by any standard, read Wednesday's announcement on the University of Maryland sorority's Facebook page. All reasonable people can agree, this is an email that should never have been sent. Further, Delta Gamma now considers the matter closed, which is basically, it's all done, man. Well, says Gawker, dream on, sisters. Since Gawker first shared the email a week ago, Martinson's F-bomb-laced fury at fellow Delta Gamma members for literally being boring, awkward, weird, mentally slow, and stupid has gone seriously viral, with major news outlets from ABC News to CNN giving it coverage. It also spawned a slew of hysterical parodies, including actor Michael Shannon's pitch-perfect delivery, a stop-motion Barbie performance on the YouTube channel The Most Popular Girls in School, a reading by an animated Joe Pesci, and a scary, funny, dramatic reading by stand-up comedian Kelsey Cook. Scary funny. Why don't we listen to... Well, I don't know which of these we want to read, because I think we want to hear the real thing first, right?
Yes, there's no point in listening to a parody or a satire of something that you don't know is being satirized.
Yeah, got it. Got to hear it first.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, man.
Take it easy, Margaret. I mean, the kid's... You know, he admires you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he admires me. As soon as I turn my back, he's doing the finger through the two... Well, I won't say it.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
You know what he's doing.
All right, in any event, so why has Martinson's screed been such a popular online fodder? Well, many reasons, according to Michael Fertig, founder and CEO of Reputation.com, who told CNN it was because of the mean girl stereotype, the surprise factor of... something so vulgar and crude being sprouted by someone who looks fairly angelic. And the fact that a quick search of her social media accounts revealed other less than politic moments. And he added the email could follow the college junior for years. Now, what is this email? Here it is. I literally want you to email me back telling me if you're mentally slow, says this deranged, so-called deranged email. The Mean Girl sorority rant read around the world has taken a somewhat predictable turn, with Delta Gamma sister Rebecca Martinson resigning from her sorority Wednesday night because of the profanity-laced media frenzy-inducing email. Now, I think we printed off this thing, if I'm not mistaken. Well, here it is in its... I don't know whether this is the email or what's going on. There are two things the Delta Gamma sorority's University of Maryland chapter refuses to tolerate. The first is Delta Gammas who are literally being so effing awkward. The second is young ladies who are so effing boring. Last week, bitches got told. A tipster forwarded us the following expletive and caps-ridden email tirade sent to the entire sorority chapter by one of its executive board members. So this girl's an executive board member.
You know, I belonged to a sorority when I went to Pennsylvania University, and never would we send out anything like this.
Yeah, you didn't have email back then.
What?
You didn't have email.
That's true, you didn't have email.
We didn't have email. Is that what they just said?
Yes. Did you have email back when you were in college?
No, we did not have email, although I do think we had horse and buggy. Good night.
Where are you going, Margaret?
I'm just going to the toilet.
Well, but
what was that? You went... I don't need to be insulted this early.
All they said was there was no email back when you were in college, right?
No, there wasn't.
Okay, isn't that... What's unfair about that statement?
It's beside the point. When we sent something... Here, I'll come back. I'm coming back just for this very quick comment. When we sent something out...
Can I interrupt you?
What?
What did you send out?
We sent out an announcement saying we're having... Let's say we sent out an announcement saying we're having a barbecue, or we're having a dance, or we're having a tea or something. Okay?
Right.
Well, what are you looking at me weird for?
Well, what did you send out if you didn't have email? And Margaret, look, they didn't have email when I was in college either.
Oh, is that right, Grandpa? Well, that's just wonderful. I'm not really talking about you. I'm talking about me. And the inference that somehow I'm menopausal or I'm scratching my...
I didn't see him scratching all. He said, man, no email.
Yeah, there was no email. And why don't you just say it, bud? Did we have fire? Yes, we did.
Okay, well, that answers that question.
You being a smartass?
Hey! Watch it.
Keep him away from me.
What?
Keep him away from me.
I'm way over here. I would never go near you.
Good. Now then. What?
We have to take a break.
Oh, you know.
We have to take... We'll be right back as Margaret explains whether or not they had fire and email.
All of you can rock.
Okay, there she goes. Just go ahead and stay in the bathroom for a while, Margaret.
I may. And guess what? Here, I just want to get... Guess what? There's no matches.
God!
We'll be right back with this sorority scrant on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth no is matches. Our bitch. The Phil no Henry matches. Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
All right, welcome back here. Now, we got everybody settled back in their seats, and all I wanted to just do is get the actual copy of this bloody thing, and I've got it here. And this is the letter that was written by this sorority sister, and we agree on one thing, Margaret, that who, you know, like, whose business is this?
Well, that's the point. I don't understand why this is a national story. This is an email that was written by some woman, and it's a sorority email, and it's no one's business but the sorority. They have no call, no cause, no count, no good two-bit...
Watch your language.
No, I won't watch my language. This is no one's business but the sorority's. And for this to become national news shows the national trend towards sticking your nose right in there and taking a big, deep breath. I think it's absolutely crude, and I think that all people listening to my voice right now, I'm Margaret Gray, and I'd like to make an announcement. Could you...
Well, Margaret...
No, hold on. Just everything stop. I'm Margaret Gray. I want to make this announcement. I'm Margaret Gray. I'm making this announcement. Would you stop that, bud?
What? I'm scratching my balls.
Oh, you love...
Hey! Watch your language, bud.
Well, she asked me to stop something.
I could see what you were doing. My name is Margaret Gray. I'm a nationally syndicated newspaper columnist. And this is my opinion. I'm not a very good public speaker. I'm a writer by profession. But there are times when a story so moves me that I find words that I did not know I possessed. Such is the case with the sorority email that was mailed out by the sorority. What mailed out
That mailed out the email.
No, I know what I'm doing. That mailed out the email, that's what I was going to say. That was put in the mail. Oh.
God, why don't you figure it out?
You know one thing I can figure out? How to get across Phil with this fist.
Well, hold on now. You're Margaret, do you want me to say it?
No, I don't want you. I'm trying to tell everyone this email that was mailed in the mail.
I think what you're trying to say, it's nobody's business.
Yes, but I had a much more articulate way of saying... I have a lot more to say than it's nobody's business. You know,
Margaret, you know, you're very rude to people that are trying to help you, okay?
Phil, I'm not in a wheelchair. I don't need help out of the chair and back into the van. What are you laughing at?
Just the idea of you being helped back into the access van.
Well, I'm not going to get up and go to the toilet. You told me not to do that.
Yeah, just...
I'm going to get...
Watch it.
Bud, there's going to be a time when Phil isn't around. That's the day.
Yeah, that's the day what? You're gonna touch my butt?
Hey!
I'll kill you.
Watch it now. I don't want any of this violence anymore, I told you. And Margaret, you're a woman, a genteel woman, an educated woman, a newspaper columnist. I don't know how many times I gotta step between you and Bud when you're getting ready to rip his throat out.
He's begging for it. Man, I've never seen a guy beg for it like him.
All right. Here is the email. Here is the full and complete email sent by this chick, and then I want off of this story once and for all, because I do agree, it ain't nobody's business. It's a sorority. Who cares? The reason why these stories get going, I'll tell you why it gets going, because there's people that didn't get into the sorority. There's people that didn't get into the fraternity. There's people that got a problem with sororities and fraternities from a personal point of view, you know, something in their past. Because I can tell you, I was never in a fraternity.
Were you in a sorority?
No, I wasn't in a sorority. You know why?
Why?
Because they're for women.
Do it, Margaret. They're for women.
Oh.
So even if I wanted to get into a sorority, and believe me, I did, but not for the reasons you're thinking, there's no way. No way at all.
Did you ever go out with a sorority girl?
I don't know. Maybe. I never asked. I didn't care. It just didn't, never, it was not on my social radar, sororities and fraternities. But I'm not putting them down. I'm not putting them down. My son was in a sorority. Sorry, Nick. You probably were in a sorority. He was in a fraternity. And so I don't put them down. They had a lot of fun, and that's fantastic. I don't have a problem with them. I'm not looking to turn them, shut them down. I'm not looking to embarrass them. Nothing, okay? And I think that's a, you know, forgive me for, you know, saying this. I don't think I'm all that, but I think that's a healthy view. So you got a fraternity, you got a sorority, they do what they do, they're weird, they're squirrely. I mean, come on, give me a break. Animal House? Hello? They drink, they party, it's what it's all about, man. There's not one adult listening to me right now, and I understand that there is dangerous behavior relative to alcohol. I think that's been addressed, but we're just talking about young men and women that are coming into adulthood, they're into their time in life where they're apart from their parents for the first time. They're socializing without any adult supervision for the first time, and they're, you know, this is good. This is not bad. Now, and the country, the United States of America, last time I checked, is still here, and this is a country that's being run by people that used to be in fraternities and sororities, or hung out with them. I know I hung out with a few of those guys because we went up to the University of Florida one week, and we tried to get into fraternities, and we didn't even go to the school there.
What?
Why'd you do that?
Because we just for laughs. We decided that we would go to all these parties they were having. They didn't know any different. Now, having said all of that, I don't understand why this story is a big thing. You know, it's typical behavior. I mean, it's typical of these guys. They give each other crap. They're bugged. The job of a sorority officer or fraternity officer is to motivate the membership, to get them to go out and do things, to stand tall, proud, and all that bull crap for whatever Greek house.
But it's called Greek house.
Because it's in Greek. Would you just listen, please?
These are all these names are Greek.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out Samagoo and Sammy Goo.
They didn't know Sammy Goo.
Yeah, what is Sammy Goo?
Ain't that the name of the sorority? Of the fraternity?
Fraternity?
Yeah.
No, it's a sorority.
What's its name?
I don't know.
Sammy Goo.
It ain't Sammy Goo. It's something else, man.
Well, how do you know about Sammy Goo?
Because there's no sorority called Sammy Goo. I'm going to come unglued.
Oh, hold on, will you?
I mean it.
Who cares, man? It doesn't make any difference. I don't give a damn what the name of the sorority is. I could care less what the name of the sorority is. Some of these people think, oh, my God, what a disgrace. Oh, give me a break, will you? All she was doing here was telling these chicks, and they're talking in chick talk, and she's getting in their face, and she's saying, get up off your dead asses and, you know, do the do, man. Now, I don't know what the protocol is here. I know they have a national chapter and the this and the that and the something else, you know, and we don't want to be represented by this or that or something else. And I guess you got to be aware of the fact that this stuff is going to get public. I'll tell you something, though, man. The public itself should not even care. The press, which I think is more and more about making the story, not reporting the story, especially you guys at Gawker. You know, I wanted to read this, and you guys just could not resist publishing the email and throwing your comments in, which are marginally interesting at best. Not funny, marginally interesting. And I'm not even, you know, like I said, I don't really have a dog in this fight, but what I am bothered by is cats in the national press that are starting to make news as opposed to report it, because you guys are so bad at finding what stories there are. And then this stuff, you know, I bet you like 90% of the American people could care less until you cats just shove this crap down our throats. And this becomes not only a big story on Gawker, Yahoo's got it, Google's got it, you know, the national mainstream media's got it. And what is it? Some chick at some sorority and God knows where, I don't know, I don't care, telling the rest of them to, you know, shove it up their you-know-what because you chicks aren't worth it and you should all die in a bus fire. So what? So that's how they talk. I'm Phil Hendry.
Thank you. That was very good, Phil.
Thank you.
There you go, Mr. Henry.
Thank you. All right, stop. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show with more important stuff.
Like what?
I don't know. We'll be right back. Famous Phil Hendry Show. Actor Edward Norton, in a scrape, in a dust up, in a bit of a contretemps with a photographer, got into a small fight, in other words, with an amateur photographer on Tuesday. Say amateur photographer. The guy's name is Elon Becerra Calderon. I don't know whether that's the actual. I don't know whether the guy's like French or something, or he's just an American with a highly affected name.
Well, why do you call that affected? Some people, Phil.
Well, Elon Becerra Calderon.
Let me see that.
Don't whip it out of my hands like that, okay?
I want to see. Elon Becerra Calderon. Yes, Elon Becerra Calderon.
Calderon? It's C-A-L...
Phil, I know what I'm doing, all right? Now, is he French? I don't know. Is he American? I don't know. I'd have to hear the man's voice. But even if it was an accent, he could still be American, because a great many Americans have accents. Now, we know this from the way a lot of them talk, right?
Yeah.
So,
Let me see this.
Don't take that.
Give me that. I'll do it. Thanks a lot. Now it's wrecked.
You should have let me do it.
No, I'm not letting you do it. Elon Becerra Calderon... But if you take that out of my hand one more time, I'm going to kick your ass. What do you think this sounds like to the audience?
I could care less.
You could care less.
I'm about the art. I'm about the broadcast. I'm about the truth. I'm Margaret Gray.
Now, that's great, Miss Gray. All right.
Thank you.
Now.
No. Just hush up.
Gray, are you done?
Yes, and then...
Edward Norton gets into fight with photographer. Edward Norton recently got into a small fight with an amateur photographer on Tuesday. The actor was approached on the streets of New York by Elon Becerra Calderon, a man who makes videos on YouTube. Well, isn't that a wonderful use of your time? The problem started when the photographer asked Norton a question. I got a quick question. People say you look like me. Is that true? The man asked. Kind of like Stuttering John, you know, asking...
Yeah, like asking a funny question.
Exactly. Edward Norton responded with, "Why are you stalking me?" It was around this time that the Fight Club star shoved Becerra Calderon's camera phone away. Now, here's Norton saying that he was being stalked.
No, read the rest of the story, because I side with the press.
You think this guy's the press, huh?
Yes, I do. Why, just because he has videos on YouTube? God, you really are judgmental.
Yes, I am judgmental, because anybody can hold a camera, anybody can follow a guy around and bug him. At what point do you say, okay, you're right, I've been following you around, giving you the creeps, you know, I'll stop. But today, it's about catching interesting video, I realize that, and some of it can be million-dollar video, I understand that too, so just keep the camera on Edward Norton. I got just a tip for you, sir, wherever you are, Mr. Calderon, Becerra, Elaine, douche.
Well, that wasn't called for.
I think it was. Here's a tip for you, man. I bet you could follow Edward Norton around forever, and if he never... That guy is not, in my opinion... what does he do, man? He's not going to get... do you think he's that mysterious?
Well, Edward Norton, he's got a very mysterious...
Yeah, you don't know what he's doing.
Who, Edward Norton?
Yes, I mean, he's one of those guys that stays below the radar.
Maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe it's because his life is dull. Maybe he just goes home, eats, a cheese sandwich, goes out, does his work, comes home, watches TV.
Masturbates?
Maybe.
Why did you say that, you ass?
Because maybe that's what he does. Maybe the most interesting thing he does. Who knows? But of all the cats that are in the news, all the TMZ celebrities, all of the people they report on, let's say at the very extreme end is Kim Kardashian, and as Bud put it the other night, Kim Kardashian and that big ass of hers, quote unquote.
What an animal.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what's in the news. Just their butt and then her. And mostly it's her butt, because her butt's going to precede it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, all you ever say is it's a good point. What do you mean her butt will precede it?
The story is her ass, okay? The story of Kim Kardashian is the story of her ass. Let's face it, okay?
It may be true. Do you have to put it that way?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I don't think I'm insulting her. I mean, Ms. Kardashian probably recognizes that it all began one fine day when, you know, someone said, look at that ass. And that became the story. And, oh, yeah, it's attached to a pretty, you know, very pretty face, a wealthy family, Kanye and all these cats, and her whole life, and, oh, you know, and now she's got a perfume line. But really, that ass...
You know, I think that that is a metaphor for something that is not very flattering, and that is that most of the time, an ass is what produces, and that's what you're saying Kim Kardashian's career is. Nothing but a load of that.
No, I didn't say that at all.
Well, yes, you did.
No, I didn't. That's what you're interpreting. I'm going to get pissed off here in about 5 seconds. Okay?
Take it easy, Phil.
No, I'm not going to take it easy. She's bugging me now. You're bugging me.
Well, all I was saying, Phil, is that...
I heard what you were saying. I'm all done listening to you tell me what you're saying. I'm saying that her ass gave birth to a load of you-know-what. Anyway, Edward Norton responded with, why are you stalking me? It was around this time the Fight Club star shoved Becerra Calderon's camera phone away. Elaine, oh, his first name. Well, isn't that cozy? Elaine later reported the so-called fight to police. He explained to authorities that he was forced to pay a visit to Beth Israel Hospital after the altercation took place. The photographer added that Norton's behavior has caused a tissue contusion on his middle finger. This guy's full of it. Since the incident was reported to police, officers decided to launch an investigation. However, the case was ultimately closed since authorities did not witness the exchange. The matter was referred to civil court. He went to hospital claiming hand pain. It was classified as harassment. Boy, what cops got a better use of their time than having to follow up on some jive-ass jackball's complaint about Edward Norton giving him an owie? Becerra Calderon described his fight with Edward Norton as very, very scary. Yeah. He said that the actor should learn to control his temper. Sure. The photographer added, I asked if I could ask a question, and he grabbed my phone. Well, according to the quote here, sir, I got a quick question. People say you stated you had a question and asked permission. You just went ahead and asked him your dopey question, and it was probably about the 19th question you'd asked the guy, and then he turned around and decided that he wanted to park the camera right up there. Although the matter has been referred to civil court, it's unknown if the amateur photographer has filed a lawsuit against the actor. None of Norton's representatives have commented on the scuffle as of this writing, but I'm sure that they'll send out some kind of report to the wire services very, very soon. Edward Norton is currently filming Alejandro González's Iñárritu. I can't read this.
It's Alejandro González Iñárritu. It's the comedy Birdman in New York City.
No, it's Birdman in New York City.
What, are you trying to be a smartass? That's what I said.
The film is called Birdman, being filmed in New York City.
Oh. The film also stars Emma Stone, Michael Keaton. Oh, look at that. Look at Michael Keaton getting work.
Give me that. Michael Keaton and Naomi Watts. The actor recently completed production on Wes Anderson's The Grand Budapest Hotel.
What's that about?
I don't know. What are you asking me for?
No, nobody ever heard of it.
Well, they just finished it, man.
Well, like a lot of the stuff that Edward Norton's been doing lately, it's probably going to direct to DVD, I think.
Is that right? Well, Margaret, I think you ought to give the guy...
No, I mean, look, what's the last big hit?
What?
What's the last big hit?
I don't know.
Bingo.
Are you a fan of Edward Norton? What do you think about the actor's fight with an amateur photographer? Oh, are you asking me? Yes. I think it was great. I wish he would have broken the guy's face open. That's how I feel. I'm Phil Henry. Thank you so much for asking.
Yeah, they're not going to use a comment like that. They want a guy that's going to call in who doesn't like him and everything.
Yeah, I know, because they're the Everyman Network, whoever the hell these guys are. Is this Gawker?
I don't know.
Let's get Harvey Weinman on the line, attorney at law. And you heard the story, Harvey. I don't know how many of these stories you have been a part of as a defense attorney. What do you think?
Well, you know, the thing that I think is that this guy, Alejandro Pena, whatever his name is.
Alejandro Pena was a Dodger pitcher.
Alejandro, the guy that got the camera grabbed, turn that alarm off, will you? And don't get in my car.
Sorry, Mr. Weinman, I'm busy.
But park it. Don't play around with it. I'm over at Woody and Eddie's, Phil. I had some dinner over here. Don't tell Ted because he gets angry if I go over here.
Where's Woody and Eddie's?
It's in San Marino.
Well, it's way far away from Beverly Hills.
It doesn't matter. Ted gets pissed off if I don't take the 20-mile trek into Beverly Hills to eat at his restaurant.
Well, he may be listening.
Hold on. What are you doing?
I gotta get the car.
You got out of the car. My car alarm's going off. Here's what I think. I think this guy. Hey, you. Turn the car alarm off, or I'm going to come over there and I'm going to turn it off with your face. You understand that?
I don't know what that is.
Well, why were you in there, this guy?
You want to take care of that?
No. No, I mean you called up. I want to talk. Now, Edward Norton. I've known this guy since he came to town. He's a very talented actor. But I will tell you this, Phil, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Edward Norton is a very talented guy. And you know, if you're friends with Edward Norton, you're...
I don't know.
If I hear it one more time, I'm going to come over there and I'll cripple you for life. No, every week this happens. Every week. Hold on, Phil.
Oh, come on, will you?
Hold on. Every week this happens. I come in my car. And there's grape juice all over the front seat. Is that you? Your daughter. Look, when I told you guys you could joyride a little bit, I meant around the block. Don't get in with your whole family.
Who is that?
The guy that parks the car here at the office. We got a valet service. I don't know what. What's your name? Seymour. He's Hispanic. You ever heard of a Hispanic guy named Seymour? Anyway, Edward Norton.
You let them joyride.
He gets in the car and they go and they get chicken or something. Oh, come on! I forget it. I'll fix it when I get over there. So, Edward Norton was joyriding in my Cadillac. Wait a minute.
You're Edward Norton.
Right. Edward Norton, he parks my car. No, he doesn't. Seymour. Seymour Alvarez got into a fight with a photographer.
You're talking about Edward Norton, the actor.
That's right. I'm sorry. Edward Norton. Now, I've known this punk kid since he got to town. Edward Norton is a great actor. And there's no questioning his ability. He's a great actor. And I've known this punk. And the first time I saw Edward Norton, I saw him on stage in New York. And I said, this guy. So I called up Shorty Weisbrecht over at CAA. I'm going to kill me. There's going to be a dead valet tomorrow morning in the paper. You just check it. And I called up Shorty Weisbrecht at CAA. I said, you got to come and you got to look at this guy, Edward Norton, because he's all that and more. So Shorty went to New York and took a look at Norton, and he came back. He said, I don't get it. You know, he doesn't have enough talent to do a Babbo soap commercial. Are you kidding? And I said, Edward Norton, not Ed Norton. He said, no, I know. He said, I know it's not the guy on Jackie Gleason. I said, of course it is. And I said, it's a young actor. He said, well, there's two of them. And that was a whole 2 weeks before he finally did go and see the right Edward Norton.
Oh, God. Okay.
Well, I'm sorry. I wanted to give you the backstory.
Yeah, I don't need all of that.
So anyway, if I come over there and I find the grape juice again, the grape juice is what bothers me. You can joyride, do anything you want. Your wife can have a baby in the back seat if you want, Seymour, but the grape juice? No. I know she's a little girl. So,
by the way, that's very nice of you to let a whole family of people joyride your Cadillac, but can we fix this story? Let's take a break, okay?
Now, you take your break. I'm going to go over and have a talk to this guy.
All right, we'll be right back with more on Edward Norton pushing some photographer. Way too much time spent on this story.
Want me to call back?
No. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You don't tell me, I tell you. I don't give a damn what you told me the other day.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Harvey Weinman on the line with us as we talk about the legal ramifications having to do... I hear that car alarm again.
Just forget it. Just ignore it. Just ignore it.
The legal ramifications of a celebrity being harassed...
Well, we don't know that he was being... but I'm going to assume he was being harassed. Look, I've known Edward Norton since he... And I told you, I told Shorty Weisbrecht at CAA, go back to New York, look at this actor that I saw on stage, and you tell me... You tell me. Now, Shorty is not one of the, you know, as they like to say, he's not one of the brightest bulbs in the tool chest, or he's not.
He's not the sharpest knife in a. He's not the sharpest knife in the light socket.
No.
That's not it.
He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
In the drawer.
Yes.
All right.
Phil's right.
Okay. Well, Shorty is. He is very smart, so he's the opposite of that.
Then why did you bring that up?
Because I wanted to make a point of saying that he's not the sharpest knife. Never mind. But I told Shorty, go back to New York.
And this sharp knife that you're talking about, by the way, took him 2 weeks to figure out who the real Ed Norton was.
Well, let me ask you something. Is that a common name?
Yes, it's a common name.
All right, so, you know, if you go back to New York and you ask, go find Ed Norton, the first thing the average idiot's going to do is think it's the Honeymooners guy. Oh, God. Turn it off, Seymour!
I can't.
Yes, you can! I showed you how!
Harvey, I can't do this.
All right, so anyway, when he finally figured it out, Ed Norton comes back to L.A., and I said to him, are you going to represent him? And he said, no, because he's lousy. I said, what are you talking about? He's going to be one of the great young actors. He said, he probably will be, but right now he stinks. I said, why'd you bring him back to L.A.? And he says to me, I didn't. He followed me. So this begins the story where I put two and two together about Ed Norton, see?
He followed him?
Yes. In other words, the guy said, are you Edward Norton? He said, yes, I am. He said, do you want to represent me? He said, I thought maybe I'd want to represent you, but what I just saw you do on that stage, you don't need a representative. You need a hazmat. Excuse me. You need a hazmat team. That's what he said.
Well, that's a very discouraging and terrible thing to say to a young artist.
Well, he said it, okay? Shorty's that kind of a guy. Well, it didn't discourage this kid Norton. Shorty comes back to L.A. This Edward Norton arrives in L.A. like 45 minutes later, on the train, because Shorty takes the train. Shorty doesn't fly. Do you know that?
I don't even know who you're talking about.
I'm talking about one of the big agents. Oh, okay. You don't know. Oh, you love that. Hey, Phil, have you ever heard of Brad Pitt? Oh, I don't know who you're talking about.
I know who he is. I don't know who Shorty, whatever.
So anyway, he gets off the train. 45 minutes later, a train pulls in, and Edward Norton's on the train. Now, Shorty doesn't know this because he's not hanging around Union Station.
I just want to ask you a question. This guy takes the train everywhere.
Yes, he doesn't like to fly because he was in an airliner crash back at the beginning of his career, back in the 70s. He was flying a 747, and it was one of the first 747s that he thought was going to crash. And it didn't. It landed safely. But the plane was so big that Shorty panicked and said, something this big cannot defy gravity forever, and they had to land and kick him off the plane. It's one of the few times.
This guy, Shorty Weisbrecht, or whatever his name is one strange cat, man.
Oh, is that right? And you're perfect?
I'm listening to your car alarm going.
Well, I've been trying to ignore it. Hey, Seymour, come here. Here's $100 if you'll get that thing to turn up. Here's $100. See that? Please turn the car alarm off. Please. Now I'm paying you. Now I'm paying you, and I shouldn't have to pay you. You're the one that got grape juice jammed into the ignition and all over the seat. You wouldn't believe it, Phil. I got into my car, and then when I tried to get out, my ass, the brand spanking new slacks, just coated with grape juice and just sticky kit. God.
Well, what else? I mean...
You know the big all-day suckers? The thing was stuck to my... And to you, you probably think it's funny.
Are you kidding me? You had all-day suckers stuck to your butt?
Oh, yeah. You think that's funny, Dickman? I'm walking into a meeting with an all-day sucker just shoved right onto my ass like it... In any event...
You're kidding.
Isn't that what that guy just asked me? Am I kidding? No, I'm not kidding.
You walked into a meeting.
I walked into a meeting with a new client. I was asked to see this woman. And I walk in with one of those big all-day suckers from Disneyland, plastered, stuck to the rear end of my pants. And she got up and left. So this was a pro bono job. I don't give a damn if she walks across the street, gets hit by a bus. But it's my reputation's at stake. And someone says, Harvey Weierman's one of the best attorneys. Oh, God, I can't breathe. Will you turn it off? Come here. Come here.
Harvey.
Hold on. Here's another $100. Now you've got $200. You'll try? Do more than try.
You're paying this guy $200. You got a meeting ruined by his daughter's all-day sucker stuck to your ass.
Not to mention the grape drink.
Not to mention the grape drink. You haven't told me yet the Edward Norton story.
Well, I guess I won't because I...
Yeah, we're at the end of the hour. That's great.
Oh, well, don't get your little heart broken. It's no big deal. It was just that Edward Norton is not a guy you want to stalk. He will, with one hand, strangle you. That's the point. That was what I wanted to say. Edward Norton, the actor, can reach over with one hand and squeeze the life right out of anyone, any man, woman, or child. That's how frightening the guy is. So don't stalk Edward Norton, whatever you do. But I guess you can mess with me. The word's out among the valets. You can get into my car. You can stick an all-day sucker on my ass.
All right, go take care of it.
Yeah.
Phil Hendry.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry show. We'll take some phone calls here because we have not had a chance the last few nights. Let's go to Karen. How are you?
Oh, Phil, we are doing wonder. We just enjoy your program, no end, and we're here tonight. I think it was Bud asked, where do we live? We live in Prince George County, Bud, outside of. Oh, listen, that's.
We still have Harvey's phone line open. Turn that phone line off, okay? Because it's bleeding through there, Bud. Oh, that's much, much better.
Yes. But Bud asked, where do we live? We live in Prince George County, Bud.
Okay, Prince George County, because Mr. Henry wants me to keep a database of the people that call.
Okay, Prince George County, of the people that call.
Just where they're calling from, Bud.
Yeah, okay. Okay, where they're calling from?
Well, why did you ask her where she was calling from?
Because I want to know who she was.
Well, then why did you ask her where she was calling from?
Oh.
I'm Karen Deauville, Bud.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Well, then that's... Okay, so what's up, Karen?
Well, Billy, here it is. Bud is cute. Oh, God, you guys are adorable. I'm calling in because Jerry's here. Jerry's got some information on... And by the way, Herb's here. We're listening to the program. We're having such a good time. We love your show. Jerry, come here.
Hey, Phil, this is Jerry Deauville. How are you?
Good, sir.
I had a question and a comment, and this... I'm sorry to backtrack a little bit. It has to do with the gentleman you were speaking with about Edward Norton, the actor, and I wanted to ask you a question. If you knew or had heard that Edward Norton has the ability, and the only thing I can compare it to, when I heard Mr. Weierman, I think it was, that was on your program a moment ago. Hold on.
He's talking about, I should have said, he's talking about Harvey Weierman. Okay.
I understand that.
Yeah. All right, Karen. So, yes, it was Mr. Weierman, and he was talking about Edward Norton, the actor. But the thing that caught my attention just toward the end of the phone conversation you were having with him was that he mentioned that Edward Norton has unusual strength in one of his hands where he could reach out and, I believe, Mr. Weierman... Hold on. What?
Phil, we don't want to give you the idea, Phil, because we love you, but we don't want to get you in trouble. We don't want to get you in trouble. Okay, go ahead.
Well, you're not going to get me at Karen? Karen?
Yeah.
You're not going to get me. Why do you think you're going to get me in trouble?
Hold on for a minute. Karen, Phil knows what he's doing.
Oh, is that Margaret? I know she hates me.
Margaret doesn't hate you.
Yeah, well, I do, sort of, Karen, because you bother me, you're petty, you just... You're disgusting.
Oh, sister, we love you too, darling. Okay, so here's Jerry.
No, you don't understand. I really do hate you.
And we love you too, darling. Here's Jerry.
Okay, can we not have that, Margaret?
Okay, Phil, you ready for me?
Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah. All right. I heard the conversation. No, I'm not trying to get Mr. Henry in trouble. I heard the conversation there with Mr. Wireman, who claimed that Edward, I'm assuming he has some information I don't have, that Edward Norton has unusual strength.
I don't think he said unusual, but he did say that Edward Norton can reach out with one hand and strangle anybody.
Okay, well, that jibes with what I'd read in Parade magazine here about 3 weeks ago, and they were talking about the old Star Trek television series, and they mentioned the character of Spock, and how he had that Vulcan nerve pinch, or the Vulcan nerve squeeze. You know, the one hand that the Vulcan would put on people.
Right, it was something like that.
Yeah. Now, Parade magazine claims, and this is in 2 weeks ago. Do you have that issue?
Where's the issue of Parade? We're going to get the issue of Parade magazine. Where's the issue of Parade magazine?
Oh, it's right. Damn
it. Is that your husband?
Say hello, Herb.
Hi, Mr. Henry.
How you doing, Herb?
Oh, great. Really enjoying the program.
Great.
This is Parade magazine, Phil, and this is from 2 weeks ago now. Let me just see if I've got the date on this. I don't mean to take up too much of your time. All right, so we're talking about the 11th. This is from the 11th of April, and in it states that Edward Norton has developed the ability, much like the character Spock on Star Trek, to reach over or reach out on the opposite shoulder of anyone he's talking to so as to not alarm them or show them where the hand comes from, and apply a pinch, not unlike the Vulcan pinch, or the Vulcan, they call it a death pinch, but he doesn't kill anyone. Have you heard any of this?
No, sir. And I doubt it. I doubt it's true.
Well, this is in Parade magazine.
You know Parade magazine?
Parade magazine claims that Edward Norton, the actor
who was in Fight Club, my favorite was American History X. I thought it was a tremendous film, a great portrayal of evil. And Edward Norton's ability to portray evil is what made me believe this, okay?
Mr. Henry, this is Herb Dovell?
Yeah, Herb.
I agree with my brother-in-law in terms of Ed Norton, because he does have that look.
You know what? Edward Norton, I think, is very handsome, but he has that look of... he's scary.
He may look scary, but I doubt seriously that he has the ability to reach... What is all of this stuff in the magazine about the...
Well, apparently Edward Norton can reach around. See, if there's somebody standing next to him, he reaches to the opposite shoulder as if he's going to put his arm around that individual, but of course he does not. What he's doing is he's reaching around. He applies that Vulcan pinch, or the pinch, as Parade called it, saying Edward Norton can apply the pinch and put someone down, take them down, if he's irritated with them. Now, the reason why I'm bringing all of this up to you is this exchange he had with a photographer. There might be something to it. Did the photographer claim to have lost any memory, anything like that?
No, there's nothing. The photographer was pushed or something by Edward Norton.
He didn't lose memory, because the reason why I'm asking...
Phil, we'll hang up. Is this getting really boring?
No, it's not boring. It's weird. I don't believe it. I don't believe anybody has the ability. What, Margaret?
Well, I don't think you can dismiss this at the risk of sounding like I'm agreeing with Karen, which I don't. I don't think you can dismiss the Vulcan, because we know that if you're talking about a civilization from another planet...
Wait a minute. The Vulcan...
I'm not done yet, bud.
Hold on for a minute. What do you mean the Vulcan? Is this more French?
Oh, my God. Margaret's a scream when she does the French.
You know, I'm not here for your entertainment, Miss Deauville. I'm here to give Phil some information, unlike you and your family.
Well, ma'am, I'm not trying to irritate anyone.
I understand that, sir, but I want to give the host of the show some information. First of all, I don't know if the Vulcan exists, and if the Vulcan, yes, that is the correct French pronunciation, if the Vulcan is as threatening or is as dangerous or is as benign as we would like to believe, We're never going to find out unless we do these exposés in Parade magazine.
I agree. And I know that probably makes you angry.
I would just as soon you not say anything, please.
Well...
Just don't say anything, please. Do you understand, Phil? The Vulcan. And
will you knock it off with the Vulcan, please, okay?
What? Don't dismiss me like I'm some... like I'm one of Seymour's children. Sticking up your world.
Well, Phil, I didn't mean to start an argument.
You're not starting any argument. I'm afraid I'm going to have to very respectfully decline any belief or... I will not lend any credulity, mine or anybody else's, to this story.
What's that mean?
Never mind.
Well, okay, Phil, but did you see the article?
No, I didn't see any article. You sure it's Parade magazine?
I thought it was, because I know on Sundays...
Well, this isn't a Sunday. 2 weeks ago, the 11th?
Yes, sir.
That was a Thursday.
Okay, that would, then that would not be Parade, would it?
Oh, I don't know. What's the magazine? We'll look around, Phil. We've got Cracked. Let me show you. We have Cracked, we have Mad.
You've got Cracked and Mad, and what else?
We have, I don't know, these joke sheets. Herb likes to print off joke sheets.
I got a bunch of joke sheets, Phil.
All right, well, it probably was a joke sheet and not a valid report. Thank you very much.
All right. Oh, I'm so sorry, Phil.
That's the stupidest peoples that I ever heard in my life.
Except for you, right there. That's the stupidest peoples. That was even stupider than what the stupid...
Both people called in, man, and read that in a joke sheet?
They read some jazz about the Vulcan death grip being applied by Edward Norton, and the only magazines they had laying around in their living room was Cracked, Mad, Viz, and something else. Parade. All right, we'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Henry show. Let's get this thing back on track, man, before we lose our minds. Floating 7-foot head leaves rowers scratching theirs. Now let's get to some serious news like that. That's next. The New York Marist College rowers came across a floating, I'm not kidding, 7-foot-tall head. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Henry show.
Truth.
Thank you.
Is our bitch.
Now, when I'm talking,
the Phil Henry
saying,
show.
No, you don't. You're not the boss of me.
Oh, okay, Malcolm.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Margaret Gray just took off because I was telling her about what I had for lunch today, and I was over at a... Again, when I mention any kind of business on the air, I'm not getting paid by them. This is what I do. I've been doing this my entire career. If I like something, then I mention it on the air. I don't, you know, is that Margaret on the phone?
Yeah.
What are you doing, Margaret?
Well, I went across the street to the Ralphsville because I wanted to find this glaze you were talking about. Now, is it for, I don't know. Let me ask the man. Do you have the glaze, the salmon glaze?
Might be.
I'm going to go over it. Phil, would you... Oh, God, I love a good glaze.
Well, what I was talking about what I had for lunch was the salmon steak.
Yes, and what was the glaze?
I don't know what it was, but it was a glaze on the salmon steak and the vegetables.
Oh, God. God.
Take it easy, Margaret.
You don't appreciate good food.
Of course I do. I'm not on the phone, you know, grunting.
Grunt? Oh, here it is. I think I found it. No.
Thank you, bud.
Yeah, I did the editorial decision to hang up on it.
Yeah, when she's going to get back, she'll be mad.
Well.
But she's going to hear about you calling her it, too.
That's the, you know what? That's the price you pay, man. You want to do the dance, you got to pay
the band?
Yeah.
She's going to come back and hear about you calling her it and hanging up on her, and she's going to be pissed.
Where is it?
Hold on.
I heard all about it because, you know what? Carlo told me over at the store.
God, you came across the street pretty fast.
You better believe it. I took my shoes off. You call me it one more time, and you will be an it. You'll be a head in a box.
Well, now while you've done a radio, and you're talking about glaze and grunting like an animal.
I was not grunting. Oh, my God.
Hey, take it easy.
Let me sit down. Bud, you don't refer to me as an it. And I wasn't grunting like an animal. I appreciate good food.
Miss Gray, you're going, oh, oh, oh.
Yeah, that's exactly what you was doing.
That's not grunting like an animal. That's a woman, sensuous woman, appreciating the tactile... You know what? I'm wasting my breath.
There you go. That's the first smart thing you've said today. You're wasting your breath. You came over from that supermarket to here in a split second. No sooner had he hung up on you.
Well, Carlo gave me the high sign.
What is with this high sign?
Phil?
Yeah, Carlo's a big snitch, man.
Yeah, Carlo.
Who's Carlo?
He works across the street at the Ralphs. And as soon as Bud hung up on me, I was going for the glaze, and Carlo gave me two thumbs up, a wink, and he did the Roberto Duran, you know what? Michael Jackson?
What, the hand to the crotch?
Yes.
And that's the high sign.
That's the sign to get back over to the studio because Bud is trying... He's getting cute.
That Carlo, I would say, is a snitch.
No, he's not a snitch.
So I want to be clear. Carlo, was he listening to the show?
Yes, he had it on, I guess, in the stock room.
And as soon as he heard Bud hang up on you and call you it...
Yes, he came out to the glaze aisle, which is where I was.
The glaze aisle?
Phil, the higher-end stores have specialty aisles. God.
All right.
And you know I love... Oh, God, I love the glaze.
Miss Gray, please, all decency.
Bud, I would act decently, but you wouldn't recognize it. Oh.
All right, here... You know, before we get into this game of back and forth and one-upmanship... I want to get this clear. You're in the aisle. You're looking at glazes. Carlo comes out. He gives you the high sign, which is two thumbs up, a wink, and he grabs his crotch.
Yes.
And you know that that means Bud called you it and was speaking disparagingly of you on the air.
Yes. What are you... Phil, I hate... Are you autistic? You know, a lot...
Hey, watch that, okay?
No, I'm saying something very... And I want to get the audience's opinion on this. You have, as everyone knows, you have a particular brilliance, Phil. I mean that. Is it possible that you have an autism of some kind?
That's a very good point, Mr. Henry.
Wait just a minute.
Phil, it is not. We're not putting you down.
Are you telling me that autism is now covering anybody that does weird things?
Well, why wouldn't it? I mean, why do you call it weird?
I call it weird because people... We'll look at it and say it's weird. People are not necessarily right. People are not necessarily that perceptive, but anybody who sees something different, most people will say, well, that's different, that's kind of weird, if it's out of the normal realm of experience. Now, where did you get this thing that I'm... Do you realize that this really disparages people that are really autistic?
I do not think that disparages them at all. I think it gives them... I don't think that there's anything disabled about you. I'm saying I think you're autistic.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, why can't you be autistic?
What do you mean autistic? Me?
Yeah, on account of the weird talent that you got.
On account of the weird talent. So anybody that's got weird... So in other words, a guy that plays jazz violin, is he autistic?
What?
What's that?
You know what a violin is, right?
Well, of course, yes.
Yeah.
And you know what jazz is?
Yeah.
A guy that plays jazz violin?
Nope, doesn't ring a bell.
It still doesn't make sense.
Okay, well, then I submit that you two are autistic, because you can't even put together those two very basic things.
Wait a minute. This is good. Hold on. Watch this, everyone. Let's have some fun. Hey, Phil.
Yes?
Jazz violin? Wow.
Yeah, that's right. I'm saying something so weird, let's laugh at the autistic guy. Oh, it goes on your record, Margaret. As you try to get into heaven, you laughed at your autistic friend, Phil.
That is a lie. I did not. I was just mocking the fact that you're into jazz violin.
I'm not into jazz violin. I'm saying it's an unusual skill, which you and Bud and Robert, how do you feel about this?
Man, I'm not saying anything about it. I think the whole thing is real weird. I think all three of you are autistic. I think I'm the only one in the room that ain't autistic.
Well, that's very insulting.
Oh, I see. But me, it's okay. Let me ask you this. If a person has a rare talent, let's say, oh, I know where you got this now.
Yeah, that lady was a human computer.
A what?
The lady that was the human computer.
You mean the human computer?
Yeah, the human computer.
They thought she was autistic because she had a skill. They thought she was autistic because she had this fantastic talent. Anybody that has some talent that's unusual, they must be autistic. And you guys, you're buying into this. Now, anything that's weird is autistic. Anything, I can't believe this stuff. I can't believe what I'm hearing. This is the result of what I call the soccer mom dictatorship. This is the totalitarianism of the soccer mom, of the sort of well-read mom. She's got just enough information to destroy civilization as we know it. I was reading some lady here the other day in some bloody blog, and she was mocking another woman, another mother, and everything she was mocking, I pretty much agreed with her. Until she came to, and another thing that she does, she didn't get her children inoculated against measles. Well, there's one area at least we can agree on.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. Did you inoculate your son?
Did I inoculate? No, I had a doctor do it.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, that's sure. You thought she did it?
No, I asked her if the...
Well, you did say, did you inoculate your son?
All right, thank you very much. We're off this topic.
Oh, Bill, don't go away mad. Just go away. I'm kidding.
Yeah, sure you're kidding. Floating seven-foot head.
Can we get to this floating head story, please?
Why? I can't even talk about... Well...
You filthy...
Hey, hey!
See this hand? You think Edward Norton?
Margaret, let go of him. Let go of him!
Yeah, how's it feel?
You can't choke me!
I didn't try to choke you. I was choking you.
You better go cool off, okay?
Is there any Kool-Aid?
Kool-Aid?
What's to drink?
There's some 7-Up in there. God!
Bitch, you're trying to kill me!
Well, then why don't you shut up, man? Okay?
Man, I didn't know she had that kind of strength.
Talking about Ed Norton, why wasn't she buying that Vulcan death grip story? Which she's got...
Don't worry about it.
Just have your 7-Up. What do we got in there, anyway?
You got Sprite.
Sprite's fine.
Great. God forbid you should reach over and try to choke me because we haven't got the right soft drinks in there. We'll be right back, folks. That was unbelievable, man. You want to press charges?
You can't call the cops?
You call the cops.
Don't you threaten him. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show. Don't you threaten him.
Let me tell you something, bud. You snitch to the cops on me.
Phil, Doug Danger joins us here for a very, very brief commentary on Charlie Chaplin's birthday. And Doug, you were talking to Dan Northcraft a moment ago about Chaplin, right?
Well, Dan is a big Chaplin fan. Dan actually, I don't think I'm talking out of school. Dan actually taped some of the Chaplin movies. He's going to lend them to me. And
what is with this car, man?
Oh, I'm standing next to Harvey right now. I'm going to give him a lift home. He's trying to get the car fixed.
You got every phone call, there's been this car alarm.
Well, I don't know about that, but Harvey. Phil, it's Harvey.
Are you with Doug?
Yeah, he's giving me a ride home.
Doug, what are you doing up in San Marino?
I was up here for a concert over at Beckman Auditorium. And Harvey gave me a call, so I'm going to give him a ride home.
Let me talk to him.
Yeah, what's up?
Why are you not, can't drive the car, huh?
I can't get into the car. Because this guy, Seymour, and his kids... And his wife and the whole neighborhood, Joy was joyriding in the car. So we can't get in. You hear the alarm going off? That's because I'm trying to break into my own car.
Well, can you get AAA?
Can I get AAA? Yeah, I think so. I've already called AAA. They've been over here 3 times. The guy's come back with a Slim Jim. He's come back with a coat hanger. He came back with a set of skeleton keys. What was the thing, the guy? I come over with some keys. I don't know. Came back with keys. He said, you say the word, and I'll go ahead and I'll take a sledgehammer to the windshield. I said, we're getting close.
A sledgehammer to the windshield?
Yes. How am I going
it in the car.
Well, why don't you put a sledgehammer to the driver's side window?
Oh, he said that. What about the driver's side window?
Yeah, let's do that, but the windshield.
He said the windshield.
Take a sledgehammer to the windshield. How are you going to see where you're going?
How am I going to get a load of this? Henry just asked, how am I going to see where I'm going? There ain't going to be no windshield. That's how I'll see where I'm going. What an idiot.
You got to be putting me on, Phil. You actually asked that?
You guys, you know... Anyway, Doug, the Chaplin films.
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin, his birthday was last week, and Turner Classic Movies was showing some of Charlie Chaplin's films, and Dan Northcraft, your engineer, has taped some of those for me, he's recorded some of them digitally, and so I'm going to be borrowing some of those films, those very great Charlie Chaplin films. As you know, Charlie Chaplin was one of the great artists of all time. The films that he made were groundbreaking. The key thing to remember about Charlie Chaplin was that essentially, if you look at his movies today, there's not a one of them that's funny. And yet he has endured.
Now who's to make that decision?
Who's to make what decision? About whether he's funny?
Yeah.
I think I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, but that's got nothing to do with the fact I'm a gay man, gay journalist. But the fact is...
Doug, I know you're a gay man and a gay journalist. You can't make a call like that.
Hold on. I didn't say I'm making a call like that. I'm just saying my perception... But my perception agrees with everyone else's. Charlie Chaplin's not funny. He's a great filmmaker. There's no question. He was a great artist. There's no question. There's not a thing funny about his movies. Some guy walking around. You're kidding, right? Who do you know?
Did you ask Dan?
I asked Dan. He said, yeah, he thinks it's funny, but Dan's being polite. I think a lot of people are under the influence.
Dan's being polite.
Yeah. I think, look, Phil, people are under the influence of the belief, well, he's Charlie Chaplin, I better say he's funny because that's what they said he was.
What, do you think he was funny? I can't believe that a guy is going to... Boy, that car alarm.
Hold on, what are you going to do? They called the cops on me because I'm breaking into my own car. So I've got to talk to this cop. When I'm done with a cop, I'm going to take a sledgehammer to the... Whatever you said, Henry, what'd you say?
The driver's... Why would you take a sledgehammer?
I can't get into the car.
Well, but Doug's giving you a ride home, right?
Yeah, but I got to get my briefcase out. See, you don't understand, man. You're way behind the ball on this. My briefcase was in the car. I got out of the car to pay Seymour. I couldn't get back in. All right? That's when I found there was a lollipop stuck to my ass, and the whole back of my suit was caked in some kind of what I thought at the time... there was someone sick in his family. I don't know what had happened. It was snot or something. I realized he said it was grape drink. And I said, well, let's get this sucker off my ass. And he didn't want to do it because he's a very modest man. He's Catholic. You know.
Yeah, that's good.
What does that mean?
It means the man didn't want to grab the lollipop off my ass. I don't know. So while we're dealing with that, all right, I'm trying to break into the car. Now I got a bunch of kids coming by laughing at me because I got a lollipop stuck to my rear end. My coat's off. You know, Phil, I'm pushing 80, and I'm having to do all this work. And finally, I said, let's get AAA, and Seymour calls them up. The cops have now shown up because someone called the cops on me trying to get into my own car. Now, this is what I'm talking about.
Take care of it. All right, so, Phil, getting back to Charlie Chaplin.
Boy, this is nuts.
Yeah, it is. Getting back to Charlie Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin is not funny. He's never been funny. I realize that he's passed on, and I don't mean any disrespect when I say that maybe now he is funny wherever he is.
Well, there are a lot of people that think he's funny.
Name one.
People that have reviewed his movies, people that are familiar with his movies, people that have watched his movies, don't even name one. And the fact is that when he was popular, and you do agree he was popular.
Yes, of course he was popular, but he wasn't popular because he was funny. He was popular because his movies they moved people. Look, when you talk about Charlie Chaplin...
You talk about his humor.
Hold on. When you talk about Charlie Chaplin, Phil, look, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. All right? You know, you're giving me an argument here.
Doug, I got to tell you something, man. All the years I've known you with a gay man and gay journalist, it doesn't impress me. It doesn't make me think that you're a genius, all right?
Well, I'm telling you right now, Phil, as I've told you many times, I'm gay. Okay, Phil?
Yes, I get that.
And so my... God, what a... Man, you really got some homophobia going, man.
No, I don't. I do not. You know that I don't. I'm saying I understand that you're gay, and I understand you believe that makes you more perceptive because of the discrimination that you had to go through, et cetera, so on and so forth.
Yeah, just blow it off, Phil. It's only my life. Just... The car alarm stopped. No, it didn't. this guy, Charlie Chaplin, this Chaplin, or whatever his name is,
Charlie Chaplin, you're a film reviewer. You're an entertainment reviewer.
I know his name, but I look at Phil. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I'm able to perceive what's important, what is. Charlie Chaplin made some very moving movies. The Kid. The Kid. That was a film by Charlie Chaplin, and it had that other guy, the guy that was the bald-headed, that bald-headed freak in Adam's Family. What was his name?
Jackie Coogan.
Jackie Coogan. There you go. When he was a little tiny kid, he was in that Charlie Chaplin movie called The Kid. Everybody loved that kid. They loved the movie. It was touching. It was moving. It wasn't funny. I don't know where you've been, man.
Charlie, here's where I've been. Why is he called a comic?
Because that's what he told everybody he was. Hi, I'm Charlie Chaplin. I'm a comedian. Okay. You know, most people watched his movies because they were very moving. They were very, very dramatic. They gave people, I guess, that car alarm. Oh, Harvey's into it now with the cop.
Usually cops can turn those things off.
Why?
I don't know. They're able to...
What, they got some... What, you think there's some car alarm switch over at the police station? What did he say? This cop asked me, as I said, I'm Harvey Wireman. This is who I am. I showed up my attorney card, and he laughed. What do you want? I'm trying to find my suit coat, because I've got a phone number in here. Hey. Anyway, so Charlie Chaplin was very moving and very, very key in the film business, but he wasn't funny, and there's nothing about him that's funny, and I think you're all wet.
Well, I disagree with you, and I'll tell you...
You just got done saying you didn't think he was funny.
I got done saying I haven't seen his movies. I don't know. I will, however, defer to the overwhelming body of opinion on Charlie Chaplin, whether you want to believe it or not, is that he's funny.
They're saying that because they... Oh, boy. Man, this is going to be hard. This is going to be tough. You know, I used to think you were an open-minded guy.
Doug, you know, I'm sorry. I just don't see the world the way you see it. Okay?
Really? You don't see the world the way I see it?
No, I do not.
The sun comes up in the east. I guess you think it comes up in the west.
The way that you review movies and the way you see culture...
No, I'm sorry. You said it already. What? This cop wants me to get out of here. He says I'm pissing him off. You're pissing me off! Let's get out of here. I'm taking Harvey home, and then I'm on my way back to O.C.
Okay. You know, no hard feelings.
No, not at all. You just told me I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and he tells me to stick it up my rear end because I don't know what I'm talking about. What's your problem, Henry?
What's your problem, man, messing around with a car alarm?
A Mexican was in my car.
Oh, aren't you the liberal?
Hey, listen, Seymour doesn't know he's Mexican.
Well, what's that got to do with anything?
He brought his kids in. Let's get out of here. I don't want to talk to this cat. Yeah, it's my cell phone. Thanks a lot. Oh, man. Man. Give me the phone. I'll wipe it off. I got grape juice all over his damn phone. Oh, Lord. Lord. Oh, shut up, Doug. I got to get this grape drink. Did he tell you what you wanted to know?
Yeah, I'm fine, man.
What's wrong with you? God, you sound like somebody hit you with a frying pan. Have you got anything like 409? No, I don't, man. Get that sticky stuff off my phone, okay? Get a load of him.
Well, all right, Harvey, thank you very much for being with us today.
You mean tonight?
Tonight. Thank Doug for me.
He says thank you. Yeah, right. He's not buying it. I got to get this grape drink, and I still got the sucker stuck on my rear end. I don't know what... I don't want to ruin a good pair of slacks. This is a $3,000 suit I'm wearing.
You still have got this all-day sucker on the ass side of your pants.
Yes. I got to get the sticky... Hey, Seymour... You're going to pay for a new phone. This guy, you got a gay guy's phone. Man, I'm not the gay guy. I'm a gay man, gay journalist. You understand that? What's that? What do you call me? He just called you a fruit. All right. Hey, Doug, come on, man.
Will you guys grow up?
This isn't your concern, Phil.
Good Lord.
What'd he do?
I don't know. It sounded like he took off after some car valet that called him queer or something. Meanwhile, he's got grape drink all over Doug's phone. They're never going to get out of that garage.
Is that where they are?
They're in a parking garage. Did you hear Harvey's car?
You know, there's something seriously wrong with everybody you know, including me. I'm beginning to think that maybe you're right.
There, you finally are admitting on a fact.
But there's something wrong with you too, bud. Doubly wrong. Double plus bad.
All right, we'll be back. World famous Phil Henry show, the 8 foot.
Oh, will you knock it off with your 8 foot tall head? You're never going to get to that story.
We will. I swear to God, next. The 8-foot tall head. It's right here.
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to do that story. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Is my car key there?
Welcome.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast.
Is this the guy?
This is the guy. And the reason why I looked this man's name up is because I was watching a, and you know me, I'm a history freak. I was watching just moments ago here a recreation of the OK Corral shootout. And they do these recreations on Military Channel and on National Geographic, and they try to figure out, you know, in other words, while the rest of the world is watching, you know, the Mindy Project, I'm watching this, so.
Or The Office.
I'm watching this kind of stuff. That's just how weird I am, and I'm always going to be that way. But anyway, they were recreating the OK Corral shootout, and they wanted to know, well, who shot who, you know?
Well, why do they want to know that?
Well, because certain guys were shot, and they didn't know who shot them. And I guess just for historical purposes, they want to know who did what to who, you know.
Who did what to who? Almost sounds like a sex movie.
Yeah.
Oh, well, to you, knuckleheads, it does. In other words, they know that a horse got in the way. They know that somebody had a shotgun. They know that this guy shot and this guy shot and another guy didn't. Like Ike Clanton, he did not do any shooting. He ran away. And they're all kinds of stuff. So they wanted to figure this out. And they recreate these things, I think, very in a very interesting way. They take the recorded event as it was witnessed by people, and there was a, you know, there was a trial, and I think there might even have been an inquest of some kind. And they then take that and they match it against whatever forensic evidence they might have. I think they the bodies of these men, some kind of a medical exam was done. And then they try to come up with a realistic narrative of what actually happened that day. And I was talking to Dan, I said, you know, these guys, along with the police forces of the East Coast and in Europe, these were the early police officers in America. These guys that worked these towns in the West, these were not even states yet, they were territories. So they had a whole other administrative structure to answer to. They had a lot less, they had a lot less of a judicial system. They had a lot less of everything. If it was a territory, it was a territory, you know. And then, of course, they had, like, in the Utah territories in the 50s, or the 1850s, they had cats running rampant like, you know, some of these Mormons, man. They thought they had their own damn country out there.
Well, I thought they did. Didn't they technically have their own country, and then they applied for statehood?
I mean, I don't know. I think by the time that, by the time James Buchanan, President Buchanan, sent troops, it obviously was a territory. It was a place that the United States had jurisdiction over. And he sent troops because of this horrible massacre that took place in the Utah Territory. And so the federal response was very clear. And that's one of the things they say about Buchanan. He was the president before Lincoln. And they say, if this guy was so ready to use federal troops in Utah, what was his problem putting down the revolt in the South?
Yeah, well, why didn't he?
Because Buchanan was a sympathizer to Southern interests. Even though he was from Pennsylvania, even though he had served many presidents in many capacities, been a cabinet member, he'd been the ambassador to Great Britain. I mean, this is a guy that was very, very well entrenched in the operation of the United States government, and his loyalties were with the U.S. He believed that the South needed to be respected, and he even, you might even say that Buchanan was the last American president to even speak in a way that was divisive, that was dangerous. Buchanan said, I think he came out and said it, if you elect a Republican, you're almost guilty of treason. Basically saying if you vote for Abraham Lincoln. So it was, today we can't even imagine a president speaking that way. I mean, presidents are supposed to keep the country together and to support, you know, whatever the process is, but this, it would, that was the state of America then. The reason why I'm bringing all of this up is because it reminded me of a story that I'd read. Early in the 20th century, there was a very remarkable New York City police officer by the name of Joseph Petrosino. And Joseph Petrosino, who had badge number 285, was obviously Italian-American. He was a very notable cop because he headed up something called the Italian Squad.
What? What's that?
The Italian Squad in the New York City Police was the forerunner to, you might say, these special service squads. It was really it was the forerunner to the Southern District DA looking into the mafia. I mean, this squad was formed because there was obvious criminal activity among some immigrant Italians and some members of the Italian-American community. It was the mafia or the Black Hand. They didn't call it the Mafia Squad. They didn't call it the Black Hand Squad. They called it the Italian Squad. And Joseph Petrosino was a New York City police officer that headed this squad. And his story should be known because he was extremely courageous at a time when going up against the mafia. They killed cops. They had no problem. Today, killing a cop is tantamount to suicide for gang members because they know that that brings the weight of every police officer down on their back, and they don't want that. But back in those days, they felt they could intimidate cops, and they could kill them and make the cops go away. Petrosino was a guy that took on the Black Hand, and he took on various sort of anarchist influences in New York. He even traveled to Italy, hot on the tail of some Black Hand mafioso member who had been in New York and had committed a number of serious crimes and was now on the lam, and Petrosino followed him all the way to Italy. And that is where, if I got my story straight here, and I should, but that is where Petrosino died, assassinated by the mafia. In 1909, Petrosino made plans to travel to Palermo, Italy. Here it is, Palermo, Sicily, on a top-secret mission. However, because of the intelligence, or the incompetence, rather, of Theodore A. Bingham, New York's police commissioner, the New York Herald published the story of Petrosino's mission.
So this man was outed by the New York Herald.
Yeah, and so they published the fact that this man was going to be traveling there. So Petrosino arrives in Italy on March the 12th, 1909. He gets a message from someone claiming to be an informant, asking the detective to meet him in the city's piazza. Oh, yeah, this is it. Piazza Marina, to give him information about the mafia, and that's where he was killed.
So they, like, ambushed him.
They ambushed him, yeah, the Italian mafia. Joseph Petrosino is well-known in the New York City Police Department proper. He's well-known to any New York City police historian, anybody that's interested in New York City police or police in general. But he should be known to, I think, every American because he was Italian, and I think that you know, especially early on in the 20th century, when you mentioned Italian, everybody thought criminal. This guy was a cop, and he was a gutsy cop, and it cost him his life. So,
what about Wyatt Earp?
What about Wyatt Earp?
Well, it all started with Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, sure, it all started with Wyatt Earp. If there hadn't been a Wyatt Earp, there wouldn't be a Joseph Petrosino.
Hey, take one for the white guys.
Get out of here. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show, The White Guys.
Do our time's a white man.
Well, yeah, but...
No, not but.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Those of you watching Phil TV in HD, you're looking at photographs of a lunar eclipse that occurred here on the West Coast last... we are now into a Friday, the 26th. This was on the 25th, but it's all on the same night. I can't make head or tail out of this.
Well, you can see the shadow on the moon. That's the Earth.
So a lunar eclipse is when the Earth is getting between the moon and the sun, and essentially what I'm looking at here is... It looks like just a partial moon.
Yeah, but people are in a moon. You're looking at a moon. They know what they're looking at.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that nice that they know what they're looking at? Because I sure don't know what I'm looking at.
Well, that stands to reason, Phil. There's no comment on you, but when it comes to astronomy, wouldn't you say that you're... And I don't mean that you're an idiot, but when it comes to astronomy, you're an idiot.
Yeah, and what are you?
Well, oh, listen, what a child.
Well, what are you?
I think I'm a little more educated. When it comes to astronomy, you're an imbecile. And I am...
A partial imbecile.
You know what I did with this hand?
Hey! All right, so, in other words, those are some pictures that I thought I'd show you. They don't show much, because we don't really know what we're looking at, but nonetheless, it sounds really exciting. Here's another picture here. And again, my apologies to those of you that don't have Phil TV, but you know what? Maybe you ought to get it.
Yay.
Very good point. Just go to philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. You get yourself Phil TV, and you can look at the pictures of the lunar eclipse. Or you could just go to a newspaper and look at those. This is the moon, and that little shadow there is the shadow of the Earth passing in front of the moon, in front of the sun, and blocking the sun from the moon. So that's where that's at.
Well, that's not very exciting.
You're right. Some people are really down with it. I like to look at pictures of the... I like the cosmos. I think it's a fascinating and marvelous thing that we see out there from time to time. I don't know what it means. There are a lot of people that see things. They go, oh, wow, did you see Saturn last night? I'm like, what are you talking about, man? Yeah, you could clearly see the rings. I'm like, what? What rings?
Well, they have telescopes.
Yeah, but even, look, I had a telescope I bought for the kids for Christmas one year. And on the box, it said, you can see the rings of Saturn, all this stuff.
What, on the box, huh? Well, get a load of you. I guess you, do you believe everything you read on boxes? I guess that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. But nonetheless, do I believe everything I read on boxes?
Yeah.
Yeah, if the box says jock strap inside, I think I do.
Maybe you,
well... Well, that, I should have read the box on... Never mind.
Yeah. All right, so, but I, you know, I've heard people buy I got the telescope, I looked through the damn thing, and I see this little blob, and I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know anything about telescopes. I don't know how to set them up. And until such time as I learn, the only thing I know how to do with a telescope, and no, I'm not looking in somebody's bedroom window, bud.
Well, God, you'd be tempted to.
I'm not tempted to, no. The only thing I look at, I'll look at a tree or something. Hey, look, there's that tree. It really is a big tree now.
Well, what about the moon?
Yeah, the moon. You can look at the moon. There's the moon. And it looks cool. It's got craters. But then some will say, hey, see Venus? No. I don't,
Well, you gotta know where to... Good Lord, you have to know where Venus is.
Yeah, it's up in the sky.
Is it in the sky? Well, thanks.
No, but I mean, I know you know it's in the sky, but you...
I know it's in the sky. I don't know what part of the... And sometimes I'll know what part of the sky, and I'll aim the damn thing at Venus, and it just looks like a freaking blob to me, so obviously I don't know what I'm doing. Anyway, the moon toe-dipped through the Earth's shadow in a partial lunar eclipse on Thursday, and to talk more with us about this... And this, you know, very, very exciting occurrence is Dr. Ron Tarner at Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado. Dr. Tarner is the head astronomer there. Dr. Tarner, were you monitoring this at all?
Well, Phil, we were briefly this evening. And I think toe dip is a very good description of what the moon and the what relationship the moon and the Earth have as they travel along this concurrent path in front of the sun.
So how did it look there in... Colorado.
Well, you know, from where we are, we're at an observatory, so we have a fairly significant and powerful viewing instruments in our Closet 1 and Closet 2 telescopes. But the average Coloradoan, if they have an average telescope, as a matter of fact, my son was over this evening, and he had a telescope that he had gotten at a birthday party. One of the kids, you know, they give these presents out.
Yeah.
And this was a plastic telescope like the kind they used on pirate ships. Okay?
Yeah.
And he had it. Brian had it up on the balcony, the second deck of our home, and he could very clearly see the eclipse as it was happening. So would you say you had an actual telescope that is... How much did the telescope cost?
The one that I bought for the kids?
Yeah.
Oh, it was over $100.
And here's my son, Brian, with his telescope that was plastic, that was got out of a bag. It was given to him in a baggie, So I don't know what you're doing wrong.
Wait, are you telling me your son had a plastic telescope that he got out of a... What do you mean, a baggie?
What? Yeah, was it... What was it?
It was a telescope. The kind that you get in a bag.
I don't know the kind you get in a bag.
Well, the kind... In other words, if you go to a toy store, there are telescopes that come in a box. And then you will find telescopes that come in a plastic bag. And it'll have like a pirate mustache with it.
In other words, it's not really a telescope.
Well, I don't want to say that because he saw Venus. Or not Venus, he saw... Well, Brian, did you see Venus?
Everything.
He says he saw Venus, too.
Oh, that... Okay. His father's an astronomer, you know.
Wait just a minute. This is a telescope that came in a bag with a pirate mustache.
Yes, and a patch.
And a pirate patch.
Yes.
So the message that I'm getting here, and it's a message that I've gotten before, is I'm too dumb to figure out...
No, come on, Phil.
No, wait. I'm too dumb to figure out how to use a telescope that cost me over $100, but your son takes a plastic telescope out of a baggie with a pirate patch and a mustache, and he sees Venus.
I guess in so many words, yes.
All right.
But, Phil, I don't think it's because you're dumb. I think it's because Margaret made a very interesting observation about you last hour, and I wanted to follow up if I could. Because you may be autistic doesn't...
Oh, come on. Are we going to go down that road again?
Phil, would you listen to him? He's a doctor.
He's not a medical doctor.
No, you're right. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm just saying, listen, you may be.
I don't even accept the idea that I may be. I think it's an insult to people that are truly autistic to sit here and say, Phil, you may be autistic. That's why you don't know how to figure out a telescope.
Well, Phil, a lot of guys figure out telescopes, you know.
You figure, Phil, that a lot of guys could figure out anything that can extend, okay?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way, but it's a very interesting observation.
Oh, I see. So I don't know how to... Oh, great. So we're alluding to sexual dysfunction?
I didn't say that. You did. That's on you, not me.
I have to agree with her.
Yeah, Dr. Turner, thank you. This is devolving into a ridiculous exchange having to do with sexuality and telescopes as phallic symbols, and you've got your son there.
I'm not talking about sex with my son. I'm talking about it with you and Ms. Gray, and only by way of answering why it is you can't figure out a telescope.
I'm not the only guy that can't figure out telescopes, okay?
Really? All right. Whatever you say.
Yeah, Mr. I could figure it out.
Don't start giving me this crap. You guys are all just sort of conspiratorially...
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right, and I'm paranoid, too. There's all kinds of stuff wrong with me. I'm autistic, I'm paranoid, I'm imagining things, I can't figure out telescopes.
Well, Phil, you brought me on the program tonight to talk about the lunar eclipse, and I was very happy to do that. And I simply wanted to point out that if you can't figure out a telescope, my son...
Yeah, your son has one that he got in a baggie with a pirate mustache and a pirate's patch, and he looked at Venus.
Yes, he did. You got all of that right.
Well, does that show you that maybe I'm not autistic because my memory's good?
Dr. Turner, that does seem to indicate something.
Well...
Get out of here.
That man... called into this program.
I'm not going to listen to that horse dung. And the two of you, Dr. Turner, what is this? What about Bob? All of a sudden, an amateur like you, and you're weighing in with him and consulting on whether I'm autistic or not.
Well, I just thought of it as a possibility because, you know, everybody's autistic now, it seems. I mean, they're talking about people, oh, I don't know. What, Charles Bronson, I read something the other day. You know, he's long gone. But,
Charles Bronson, huh?
Yes, because his face always... He never changed expressions?
Yeah, I thought Charles Bronson was an autistic actor.
You sure they weren't saying artistic?
No, they weren't.
And because he never changed expressions.
Yeah, I thought maybe.
You know what? I think you're making that up. I don't think there's anything you guys are saying tonight. We'll take a break and let me just collect myself.
It is shocking news.
Yeah. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. The Backstage Pass. You can not only listen to this falderall, you can watch it happen as it's happening. We'll be right
Truth
back.
Is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the music of what was once a Nazi sympathizer. That's right. This is Ace of Base, and one member of their group, some guy named Ulf something or other, used to be in a Nazi band.
Oh, my ass.
Maybe. Wow, there's some soul there. Ace of Base, and one of the members of the group has come clean on his Nazi past. That and more coming up next on The Phil Andrews Show. Okay, enough of that.
I like this song. This is called The Sign. Do, 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 do. You don't like this?
No, I don't really. I don't go for pop music. I've never been a big, adult contemporary kind of a guy. And,
This song's bitching.
But don't dance because you've got that limp. Would you ask him not to dance?
Why can't he dance?
Because he's... Look at him, he's limping around the room like Quasimodo.
Yeah!
All right, where's the story, bud? I don't care about you dancing. Ekberg, that's this jackass's name. Some cat by the name of Ulf Ekberg. And this guy was in Ace of Base. Where's this guy's damn story? And Ace of Base's Ulf Ekberg apparently copped to having had right-wing opinions when he was a teenager. Those opinions were based on poor judgment and ignorance. I'm truly sorry for any hurt and disappointment this has caused our fans. I really hope that we clearly have stated that Ace of Base never shared any of these opinions and strongly oppose all extremist opinions on both the right and the left wing. Yeah, those lefties, they bug me too. No, he didn't say that, but he did say, my past is my own and only I can own up to it. What? Paranoisy. Only about 1,000 copies of the Commit Suicide album, which was reportedly titled Oof Was a Nazi, were produced. Purportedly, its song list included the tracks Don't Touch Our Country and White Power, Black Skull Slaughter. Good God!
What is that?
I think it's some group or some group that he used to be in trying to, malign this poor man. Would you turn that crap off, please?
It's not crap. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's just so sweet.
But it's like Ace of Base. There is a hit.
That's nice. I'm glad it was a hit. What happened to the story, bud? You know, I'm going to start killing somebody around here, man. So that's essentially it, though. This guy, Ulf Ekberg, look him up to read his story. You know, more of us. Here it is. Ulf Ekberg. Ulf Ekberg. Speaking exclusively with E! News, the musician addressed the public firestorm over his alleged past Nazi ties. What public firestorm?
Well, Phil, in Europe, Ace of Base is all that.
Well, that's nice. You know, I'll never forget, my cousins are from Canada. My cousins are Canadian. And, you really know there's a distinct Canadian side of the family and an American side of the family. When my cousins, and this was back in the 70s, would say, wow, have you guys heard ABBA? And we were like, who? Sure enough, they were right. ABBA became a big hit. But they were a huge hit in Europe and in Canada and other places before they ever came here to the States.
Well, the United States is notoriously insular, Phil, when it comes to certain things. I don't think it's anything to be proud of.
I do. I think it's something to be proud of, because if you make it in America, man, you've made it. And we're very particular here. Soccer will never be an international sport until it makes it here.
That is horse dung, and you know it.
Well, yes, I do know it, but it's a nice thing to say. Actually, it's the one thing when I look at soccer, it's the one thing we are kind of like clueless about. Although, it took me a long time to start to enjoy it. I'm only enjoying it now, and not because of the sport. I'm enjoying it by way of the culture around English soccer.
Yeah, you like the hooliganism?
No, I do not like the hooliganism, no. It's the fans. I like the fans, I like the league, I like the team. I like the culture around it. And yes, the drinking. Okay, I'll go right ahead and say it. The fact that they celebrate quaffing one.
Well, no, they don't, because they had all of the hooliganism.
They had hooliganism, yeah, but they still meet in their pubs, and yeah, I don't know, I just dig it. So anyway, getting back here to Ace of Base, speaking exclusively with E! News, the musician addressed the public firestorm over his alleged Nazi ties after a report surfaced Tuesday claiming that he was a member of a pro-Nazi band before he helped form the hit-making Swedish pop quartet that would eventually churn out hits like All That She Wants and The Sign, which we just heard there. And although Ekberg admits that he is regretful about some of my thoughts from those days, which he calls nauseating, he insists that the band in question, Commit Suicide, did not write the controversial song supposedly attributed to them, which popped up in a demo tape that's reportedly been making the rounds for some time now. I have seen the demo of six songs that began floating around in 1996 claiming that Commit Suicide had written those songs. I did have a synth band called Commit Suicide between 1984 and 1986 with two gentlemen called Jens Andersen and Jens Svensson, and two of the songs in this demo were written and performed by us, Ekberg tells E! News. The problem is that the other four songs are skinhead music with very racist lyrics, he explains. These songs have absolutely nothing to do with Commit Suicide. We did not write or perform those songs that were attributed to us.
Well, but he does admit having these Nazi views.
Well, let's read on, because I think that that's why they're attributed to them. According to the music site Noisy, Noisy.com, which reported on Ekberg's purported Nazi connection, one of those songs includes these lyrics, which the site translated as, "Men in white hoods march down the road. We enjoy ourselves when you're sawing off N-word heads."
Oh, my God.
"Immigrant, we hate you. Out, 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 out. Nordic people, wake up now. Shoot, 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 shoot." Even more damning, the site also published a photograph allegedly of Ekberg doing the Nazi salute. Commit Suicide was a new wave music band creating and performing electronic music on synthesizers without any political touch or agenda, Ekberg continued. "The racist songs in this demo were not by us, but our potential association with such groups is a matter I truly regret." Aha! Now he finally gets to it. The 42-year-old also denied reports that he was affiliated with the far-right political group Swedish Democrats, which has in the past been lobbed with accusations of racism. "I want to point out that I never had been a member of Swedish Democrats. That is a factual error, whereas mine was an error more serious than that," he says. All right. "I have always been deeply regretful of that period in my life as I strive to bring happiness to people, and during that period I did not live up to that standard," the musician explained, referring to my behavior and my mindset in the 1980s. "I have not been involved in violence or political activism in the past 25 years. However, I find some of my thoughts from those days..." I read you the rest of that. "Some of my thoughts from those days nauseating to myself today. And although he cops to having had right-wing opinions as a teenager, he said those opinions were based on poor judgment and ignorance." So this guy is saying that there might have been violence.
Where do you read that?
He said in the last 25 years. He said, "I've not been involved in the last 25 years. Now, the guy's 42, which puts him at the age of 22 in 1993. In 25 years, so when he was from... up until the age of 17, he's claiming he might have been involved in race-related violence. My God, this guy had a band in 84. How old was he, six?
Yeah, the guy's like four.
No, he wasn't four, but the guy's 42, so, you know, he was a very young man when he had this band, and he was probably very, very young when he was involved in whatever the hell it was he was involved in. Some of these lyrics are like way out there, man. But you want to know something? That cat is absolutely right. He was very young. He's admitting to the fact he had those views when he was young. He's saying he's owning up to what they did do and what they didn't do. He doesn't want to be painted with some stripe. He doesn't want to be accused of having written songs that he didn't write. And he doesn't want to be accused of having had a band doing things that they weren't doing. But he is saying he had these views.
Well, it sounds to me like he's setting himself up for some political office. Like he's trying to clean it up.
Yeah, what if he's trying to clean everything out?
For what?
For some run, Phil, potentially, and God forbid... God forgive me for saying this, and God forbid that it should happen, but he may be running for Prime Minister of the Republic of... Is it Norway?
No, it's Sweden.
All right, well...
He may be running for...
Potentially running for the possibility of the Prime Ministership, or whatever they call it, of the Sweden... What's it called?
Sweden.
Of Sweden?
Phil,
what is that?
We're done, because you took too long.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, here it is. This is the world-famous floating head story.
Finally, we're going to get to this. You have been...
Just take it easy. The crew team...
Well, I mean, you've been talking about this all night. I want to know... And if he says anything...
Bud, just keep your dirty comments to yourself.
You don't want us to talk about giant head.
You see what I'm saying?
I'm going to kick you out of the studio.
Well...
I'm going to kick you out of the studio. The crew team at New York's Marist College came across a puzzling sight this week when a large foam head floating in Hudson River crossed their path toward the end of their morning row. While on the river... What do you want, bud?
What's a row?
See, he's going to keep doing this.
It's a rowing team.
That's all I want to know.
Is that it?
Yeah.
While on the river Monday... God, bud, you went... Yeah.
Yeah, man, you sound weird. Why don't you just shut up, man? Let him read.
You sound weird.
No, you sound weird.
I'm not the one with the thick lips.
Okay, both of you, get out of here, bud. Get out of here.
I'm too angry.
Get out of here.
Good.
That's long overdue.
And stay out.
I didn't do nothing. All I said...
The racist comment right then. The crew team at New York's Marist College came across a puzzling sight this week when a large foam head floating in Hudson River crossed their path toward the end of their morning row. While on the river Monday morning, crew coach Matt Lavin was the first to spot the mysterious 7-foot-high fiberglass-covered head, which is 4 to 5 feet wide. The ominous sighting gave the coach pause, and he had his team stay back as he approached to investigate.
Good God, what do you think it was?
I don't think it was anything serious.
Well, I mean, yeah, everybody backing up.
Do you think it was something that was religious?
No, I don't. Hold on.
Yeah, but you could see he was concerned.
Well, he was concerned because there's a giant floating head. I guess, I don't know.
You see what I'm saying? So there's something about that.
Well, I would imagine a giant floating head in the Hudson River would, like, you know, wow, what is that, dude? So he had his team stay back.
Why?
Maybe he thought there was an explosive in it, man. Maybe he thought that it was tied to a mine. I mean, it is unusual. And the first thing you're going to do is go over to it to check it out. And if someone wants to hurt somebody, you know, that's kind of an interesting booby trap, I guess. But the only thing, who are you going to kill?
Well, if it went into a boat, if it floated over to a boat, if the head somehow propelled itself, I don't mean propelled itself.
Yeah, but if the head went over...
Yes.
If the head went over. See, you see what I'm saying? You know...
No, Phil, we don't see what... We're saying if the head ran into a boat.
That I can relate to. I can relate to the head running into a boat. But you didn't say that. You said if it propelled itself.
Well, you don't know why the head's floating, do you?
Yes, I do.
Why?
Because the currents are floating it here and there.
No, I'm not saying... Okay, if that's true, how did it find its way into the Hudson River near New York City? Oh, coincidence?
Yeah, not coincidence. It fell into the river at some point around New York City. It is something, and obviously it was in the water for a long time because you could see it was eroded in places. It came from, some people are saying that it might have come from, there was a wardrobe barge of some kind, okay?
Phil, I've been in show business my whole life. And I've never heard of a wardrobe barge. Wow.
Well, what's a wardrobe barge, man?
That I'm quoting the news. They said there was a barge that was carrying theatrical props down the river at one point.
Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I don't know what it is.
Well, I've never heard of a wardrobe barge, unless you're talking about Janet Jackson.
Give me five.
Yeah.
Aren't you funny? All right, anyway, Lavin was in a small motorboat beside the team. Greg Cannon, director of public affairs for the Poughkeepsie School, told ABCNews.com. He didn't know what it was at first, but he saw it was an obstruction that would have been in the way of the shipping channel, so he went out to investigate.
Oh, right. So all of a sudden he's concerned about New York shipping channels.
Look at Margaret. Once he realized he wasn't in a scene from Planet of the Apes and that it wouldn't be terribly heavy, he wrapped a line around the head and towed it himself. The crew team then helped him pull it in from the water. They pulled it in, and it was some kind of styrofoam core with a fiberglass shell over it, according to Cannon. Enough of the foam was exposed that it got waterlogged. It got pretty heavy. Members of the team helped drag it up onto the dock. From there, they drag this thing back to the school up the river, I guess, or it's some point near the school, and they've decided to mount this thing near the rowing team's boathouse as a kind of souvenir of their morning rows. In fact, I think they've even given it a name, but I don't know what the name is. They don't know where the thing is from. They theorize, as I mentioned to you, Margaret, that it might have fallen off of a barge that was hauling theatrical props. But if you look at this thing, it's obviously been in the water a long time, like the school's public affairs director pointed out, because it's waterlogged. It has pieces of the fiberglass are peeled off. One of the students, who not only a member of the rowing team, but he's also an art student, wanted to refurbish it. And like I said, they want to put it on top of the team's boathouse as some kind of a totem of some kind. One of the weird theories, and Coach Lavin said he doesn't agree with this, and I have to agree with him.
Well, he said Hurricane Katrina. Why don't you agree with that?
I think that's wishful thinking. Ooh, it came from, somebody decided that it looked like something off of a Mardi Gras float and that it got blown out into the Gulf from Hurricane Katrina and somehow made its way all the way up to New York Harbor and then just floated in. And wow, look at this. I don't think so. First of all, it had metal piping in it, too. It not only was styrofoam, and it not only was fiberglass, but it had this metal almost reinforcement. It wasn't rebar, but it was kind of a metal pipe, which makes you think that it was permanently affixed to something.
What do you mean?
Well, it just so happens that they use styrofoam in modern construction. Not a lot of it, but a lot of those columns that you see, folks, especially on McMansions, a lot of the molding that you see on the outside of houses has styrofoam. It's stucco over styrofoam.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine someone buying a home and finding that?
I found it on my house. You kidding?
You're kidding me.
No. It sort of pissed me off because the stucco was coming away, and I go, look at this, it's styrofoam. Now, having said that, how do we know that that wasn't some sort of an ornamentation from a building somewhere that, yes, might have gotten blown off in a storm, probably more likely Hurricane, Sandy?
Yes, the one in New York.
Yeah. Maybe it was something that got blown off of the top of a building or blown off of something that was supposed to be sort of permanently affixed, because this metal piping that they found inside of it might have meant that it was attached to a larger structure of some kind. But I'm sure that it came from the New York area, that it was lost at some point and went into the water and has been sitting in the water for a long time. I don't know why it wasn't discovered until now, but there it was floating in the Hudson River in New York.
Well, how do you miss something that's 7 feet tall like that?
I don't know. Unless it was obscured by brush, unless the current suddenly picked up and it got blown down the river. The Hudson River goes north and travels all the way to, doesn't it go all the way up to the St. Lawrence River or something? I don't know, the Erie Canal. But anyway, this thing had been in the water for a long time, that's for sure, because like the guy said, it was waterlogged. It was. I think it's kind of interesting.
Man, I think that'll find out that head come from New Orleans.
No, it's not from New Orleans. You heard Phil.
Nah, I don't know.
Why do you think it's from New Orleans, man? People come up with goofy stories like that because they want... Ooh, wow. There's a connection.
Why couldn't there be?
Think about it, man. Wait, just think about it. Why would this thing float from New Orleans out of the Gulf, then around Florida, and then up the East Coast?
Well, the hurricanes and everything, man, like the Gulf Stream.
Well, I'd have to see what the direction of the Gulf Stream is.
Well, that's a good point. Remember the movie, what was it, Jaws?
Yeah.
The shark came from the Mississippi River.
No, it was the one shark they caught that had a license plate in it.
Yeah, that's right, a Louisiana license plate.
I don't know, man. The shark that they caught off of Long Island, yeah, the shark had been around. But that's something that actually can guide itself and direct itself. A shark is going to go where it's going to go. Ahead.
Well, that's why I'm saying, did it propel or...
No, Margaret, I don't think it moved itself.
You know, you're very cynical, Phil.
Well, that's the only thing to explain it.
That's the only thing that would explain it coming from New Orleans, man. Yeah, it drove itself up to New York. God, give me a break, will you?
Don't be so close-minded.
I'm not close-minded. I'm trying to be intelligent here. I don't think that head floated from the Mardi Gras through the Gulf all the way up the side, up the thing, into the damn,
Hudson River? You don't know the name of it.
Yes, I do. The Hudson River.
Where is it?
New York.
Wrong. New York Harbor.
Oh, get out of here, will you? Anyway, congratulations, Mr. Head, for finding your way all the way up the... what are you laughing at, bud? He's in the doorway laughing.
Mr. Head! You can't hit me either because I'm way over here. And it was, ow, that hurt.
Yeah, I didn't know I had that kind of aim, did you?
Wow, with a golf ball.
Yep. All right, folks, one thing. By the way, I've noticed something, and if I ever do this, please tell me to stop. I don't know why it bothers me, but there was an interview going on during the events of last week around the terrible news events, but there are people, I don't know why they do it, when they ask you, you ask them a question, they start off every answer with so. Have you noticed this?
No.
Mr. Jones, how are you doing today? So, I'm fine.
No, he didn't do that.
I swear to God, you'll say, like, what do you think caused this? So, there's a, or so, you ever heard that?
Yeah, I think it's because they are nervous.
Nervous? Well, I guess I can understand they're nervous, but that actually happened to me today in conversation with just a person that I know. I said, what time do you think you'll be there tomorrow? So, I have a dental appointment.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe it's autism. I'm kidding.
All right, we'll be right back, folks. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. And don't forget your backstage pass, which gives you a view into the world, into the wild, weird, wicked, wacky, woo world of Will Wendry or Phil Henry.
Will Wendry, man.
Yeah, it started with a W.
I didn't tell you could come back in here yet.
Truth. Phil Henry Show. He's our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Will Wendry.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Now, what are you trying to sell me?
What do you mean, what am I trying to sell you? I'm not trying to sell you guys anything.
Well, you're talking about like a giant tsunami.
Well, I mean, we're talking about, currents. We're talking about weather. We're talking about how things are affected. This giant head story is a small example of the interesting things you can find in the water. And Dan and I were discussing here, as I was with you, Margaret, and you, Robert. And Bud, you can come sit down now.
Can I comment on a news stories and everything?
We'll see.
One word out of you that's dumb, and all bets are off.
Margaret, I'll make that call. Thank you very much.
Well,
I'll make the call. Thank you very much. The stuff that's floating in the water, after the Japanese tsunami, they found stuff on the northwest coast, Oregon, Washington, docks, bits of dock. And
how do you know it's from Japan?
You ever heard of Japanese writing? Wow.
All right.
Yeah. That could have been not in Japanese.
It was in Japanese, though they knew that these were docks from the tsunami. And they also found, as we were talking, crustacean kinds of sea mollusks, animals that are indigenous, that is sea life indigenous to the coast of Japan, but is not necessarily indigenous here to the United States. And that kind of thing environmentally can be dangerous. And I'm not just talking about tree-hugging stuff. I'm talking about a commercial fisher people who are, you know, plying those waters for their livelihood. And now all of a sudden, the sea life up there could be dying out or otherwise negatively affected because you've introduced a species into those waters that is harming the native sea life. And so that's something that they had to take into consideration. But there was an earthquake off of the coast of Japan in the early 18th century.
Now, how do they know that? That I got to hear.
I'll tell you how they know it. It's very easy. You take a look at the record. You look at the geologic record. There are trees, surviving trees or roots in the northwestern part of the United States that show very obvious signs of having been submerged up to a certain level in seawater. You can find it in the strata of the rocks
Look at you with the big word strata. What does that mean, anyway?
Yeah.
Look at me with the big word strata? Oh, wow. It's plural of stratum, okay?
Which is what?
These are the layers of soil. Margaret, don't bug me. I'm on a roll here.
Yes, Professor.
Anyway, so there was an earthquake that created a tsunami that was... obviously, this tsunami left Japan and affected the northwest part of the United States. It was a lot more powerful than the one that was just felt, a couple of years ago in Japan. The only way that we have record of these things is from the, not anecdotal, but the oral tradition of the Japanese people at that time, living in villages along the coast. The stories are very clear. There was an enormous earthquake, an enormous tidal condition that affected large portions of land and killed a lot of people. And then also Native American oral history speaks of a wave of some kind, a tsunami of some kind that hit the northwestern part of what we now know as the United States. Back then it was the early 18th century. I don't know what the hell it was.
Probably like the...
Was that Ireland? Well, not Ireland, but...
Not Ireland, man.
It was Spain. Wasn't it Spain?
No, it was not Spain. It was... Dutch.
Not Dutch? Washington and Oregon?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Dutch.
Well, those were the only ones that were... Who were the ones that were exploring? The Spanish, the Portuguese, the Dutchies, or whatever they're called.
The Dutch.
The Dutch.
Yeah.
And the,
What about a Norwegian?
There is no such thing as Norwegian. Are you going to get on that kick again?
Oh, Norwegians.
You're just talking about one.
Ace of Base, they're from Sweden, not from Norwegica. I mean from...
Norway.
Norway. No, it was probably British.
That's it, yes.
British.
You mean that's it? Go Dutch?
Same difference.
Not really, but in any event, so yeah, that's the history. There's an oral tradition among Native people of northwest United States that a big tsunami hit. And they also have that, as I said, they have the geologic record, they have the record in the soil strata. They know that there was a large event having to do with seawater and affecting many miles inland, the northwestern part of the United States. I'll tell you something, man. If we'd had a tsunami like that this time around, then you would have seen some damage up there. But as it was, it nailed, I forget which part of, it was Northern California, and that was about it. Anyway, enough with the giant head, man. I've had it with that giant head.
Watch how you say that.
You guys with your dirty minds. We got people listening, bud. You know, they may not want to keep hearing your head jokes, okay?
You're the one who's all talking about, hey, giant head. Everybody, come up and get it. Giant head.
Get out of here. I didn't say anything of the sort.
Yeah, come and get it, man. You're talking about come and get it.
That's, you might as well have done that.
Like I'm some carnival barker. No, I wasn't. I was talking about a story. Man, you dumb. Woo, you dumb. All right, ladies and gentlemen, a reminder that the Phil Hendry website, philhendryshow.com, online at philhendryshow.com, with a backstage pass, you have thousands and thousands of hours of audio. Coming very, very soon, within the next couple, 3 weeks, we will have free trials. That's right, we will be offering a free trial subscription to our website. So you'll be able to enter the website, listen to the various offerings that we have, watch the video cast at your leisure, baby. And we're going to be introducing an affiliate program. So I have long promised our BSPs a little bit of a reward. We've got some more stuff coming up. We're going to be mass mailing to everybody who is who's been a friend of our radio show and our website down through the years. Then we're also going to be sending out an email to our BSPs. We're going to be putting our BSPs in this affiliate program so that if you refer people who do get website subscriptions, that's going to benefit you. And as well, we will be, what was the other thing I said we were going to do?
Free trials.
The free trial, we'll be introducing that. So that's forthcoming. And why is the TV frozen? What happened here?
I don't know. It always does the weird things like that.
I just want to let a lot of you guys know this. If you don't know this, for those of you who may be up late and this is unusual for you, in the middle of the night, the cable companies decide to do all kinds of squirrely stuff with the TV. Man, I've seen these things almost blow apart. It's frozen, you got weird... I'm waiting for the night that nothing but nonstop porn starts pouring through these screens until 6 a.m. Cut. The Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry and is a production of Bud Dickman Enterprises. I'm just kidding. It is what it is. Join us again tomorrow night, tonight at 10 on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast for the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And until that time, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.